Okay, and welcome everyone to a special Thursday afternoon Cancel the Cabal on Shake and Wake Radio and People's Internet Radio and PSN Radio. I searched for about 20 minutes for a biography for my guest, and I couldn't find anything but personal attacks by the system, so I'm going to ask my guest to give her own bio. They have done their best to squelch her message and her words. But I want to welcome Dr. Judy Mikovits to the program, to Shake and Wake, People's Internet Radio and PSN Radio, and also my YouTube recording. So welcome, Dr. Mikovits.
Thanks, Stephen. It's nice to be here.
Well, as I said, I searched for 20 minutes to try to find a good bio on you, and I couldn't find anything but personal attacks and rhetorical devices. Would you please give us a little bit of a history of your background?
Sure. I have a PhD in biochemistry and molecular biology from George Washington University. 1991, November 14th, I defended that. My thesis was about HIV latency, meaning dormancy in the innate immune systems. That thesis in the body of work that showed how to silence the expression of retroviruses and prevent the development of AIDS through non-toxic means, things like peptide T, things like DNA methylation modulators, things like keeping the cytokine storm down by restoring balance to the immune system would keep the virus silent and in fact cure AIDS, which we know we don't hear about HIV causing AIDS anymore because it wasn't the cause. It's not the infection. It's the dysregulated immune response. AIDS means acquired immune deficiency, but throughout the 80s, I actually started my work at the National Cancer Institute June 10th, 1980, with a degree in chemistry out of the University of Virginia. I was purifying natural products as drugs, as therapeutics for cancer and virus-associated diseases. At the time in the 80s, the only thing the Cancer Institute focused on was viral causes of cancer. So worked in translational program, the biological response modifiers program, where we confirmed the isolation of HIV from someone with AIDS. That was Luc Montagnier's patient samples, Luc Montagnier's discovery of HIV, which he called LAV, lymphadenopathy virus, and basically had many natural treatments for it, type 1 interferons, which I also purified, immune therapies like interleukin-2 and other things, cannabinoids, peptide T, all of these things that could have cured AIDS a long time ago, if not for Tony Fauci and Bob Gallo and the forces that be in the government preventing patients from being healed and driving towards patents and things that we're seeing right now in COVID-19. So I worked there from that entry level technician, June 10th, 1980 till May 11th of 2001. And I went from that job that I, in 1999, I led the lab of antiviral drug mechanisms, which developed drugs for AIDS-associated cancers, and developed diagnostic strategies. So we changed a lot of science, over the 21 years. We changed a lot of things from deadly diseases. We found new diagnostic strategies to understand non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and target therapies so as not to destroy the immune system. I went on to industry in 2001, moved to California, where I led a startup company called, I was led the cancer biology program at Epigenics Pharmaceuticals, which was focused on the epigenetics, the dysregulated expression of genes at the heart of at the heart of cancer and AIDS and infectious diseases. That company was sold to a larger company in 2006. And I had the opportunity to go to that company or to start what ended up being the first ever neuroimmune institute and we made that in Nevada in 2007 through 2011. And so I used that same systems biology approach that was so successful at the Biological Response Modifiers Program, which the government closed in 1987 or so, saying we don't need translational research. Everything they could do to stop people from curing cancers or stop cancer cures or therapies that were part of curative strategies over my 40-year career, the government's done stopped. So anyway, the Neuroimmune Institute that I co-founded and literally built from the ground up based on a systems biology approach. There in 2009, we isolated a new family of viruses that actually jumped into humans through a contaminated blood supply all the way back to HIV/AIDS and injected mouse cancer-causing and neuroimmune disease-causing retroviruses. They were called the XMRVs and first detected by PCR. We know the problem of that, but not isolated by the discoverers. Joe DeRisi and Bob Silverman only looked at PCR of two parts of the virus. So we now know they made an infectious molecular clone, which is contaminating many cell lines in laboratories and infecting many people as they're injected by vaccines. They destroyed the work showing how many strains of natural isolates actually came from vaccines and were causing all kinds of diseases, cancer, and all you needed was the expression of the envelope alone of the retroviruses in order to drive disease development. You don't need infectious and transmissible, even though we showed that, and that's why it's important in the whole COVID study. So that paper came out for the isolation and characterization of those viruses in association with chronic fatigue syndrome. The paper came out in Science October 8th of 2009. Really to great fanfare, as John Coffin and Jonathan Stoye wrote an accompanying opinion article that basically said, one new virus, how many old diseases? And so by the end of 2011, when I was fired and jailed and a lot of good things happening so they could cover up all this data, lock down my offices, take everything out of my 40-year career, 35-year career, out of my two offices there at the University of Nevada, and then start to tell a different story, and then start to have, you know, throughout 2010 and 11, the journal Science, if your audience simply goes to sciencemag.org and yes, searches Mikovits and Cohen or Mikovits, Cohen and Ensor Inc., you'll come up with these, I don't even know what you call it, these attack journalists.
Personal attacks, yes.
Who spin the science. They're not scientists, and they spin the science in a way to attack, you know, the messenger. And my simple crime was that the data wouldn't go away because the data were right and true. So they would, attack the institute. They would attack for you know, the people I was working for, the Whittemores were misappropriating federal funds. They were selling an unvalidated diagnostic test. Oh, wait a minute. What's the unvalidated diagnostic test in COVID-19 that is making trillions of dollars worldwide? I think the Whittemores might have sold 100 of them. And so they were there, that you can see if you search that on September 22nd of 2011. Jonathan Cohen wrote one of these op-ed articles that had a big X false positive through it, that there was no XMRV. And this was the day before I debated John Coffin about, you know, how many of these viruses were there. And that was basically the question. I said, how many new viruses, you know, and new diseases have we accelerated? Lou Gehrig's disease, lupus, autoimmunity, cancer,
polio,
autism. So it was all associated with using animal cell lines and aborted human cell lines as manufacturing plants for vaccines. And so every flu vaccine is loaded with retroviruses. The polio vaccines have the XMRVs, the Vero monkey kidney cell lines that you're driving, that are growing the bat cells, the bat tissues, the bat viruses. Clearly, COVID-19 is a cover-up of all of this. And the first people who are being murdered by the shots, by the masks, by everything, are the people who have been infected by injection and their lives already destroyed. And simply, the government doesn't want to pay for it. You know, they cannot admit that the vaccines caused all of this. So now they're simply murdering these people and calling it COVID.
Well, they've always attacked us in that way. Whenever they have done something, they have always blamed it on, the cancer is cancers are up over the last 40 years, 4,000%. Diabetes is up 4,000% over the last 30 plus years. Autism. I've heard a story that there was a time. Well, not so much autism, but infant cancers. There was a time that doctors would travel thousands and thousands of miles just to study a child that got cancer. And
we're injecting hours-old babies with hepatitis B vaccines. Minutes. Loaded with aluminum. We're destroying the microbiome. We're destroying the virome and microbiome communication. We're just creating AIDS. Cancer is an acquired immune dysfunction deficiency. You know, we're creating this. We've created this industry. When I started in the National Cancer Institute, like I said, June 10th, 1980, essentially no one had cancer. It was a closet disease, 1 in 10. Now it's 1 in 2. Now we see teenagers with triple negative breast cancers.
Yes.
And they're heavily vaccinated. So as you know from our book, Plague of Corruption, you know, after I was released, I was silenced for 5 years on a virtual gag order. I was held in jail for 5 days without seeing a lawyer, without having any of my due process or constitution. You're supposed to see a judge before 48 hours. And I was taken into jail at 1 o'clock on Friday afternoon, November 18th of 2011, and the jail here in Ventura had the magistrate. The judge was right on the second floor. All they had to do was walk me upstairs. And they held me for 5 days there without any kind of legal representation while they tried to Epstein me or tried to get me to sign a apology, which was a confession that basically said I made up all of XMRV and I'd spend the rest of my life doing honest research. and I basically told them what they could do to themselves. And I'd already spent my entire life doing honest research, and I'll spend the rest of my life making this a nightmare for you. And I'm horrified that they turned it around and murdered the people they injured now, and yes, will continue to murder millions, tens of millions of innocent people.
That's one thing I wanted to tell you. I haven't got a chance the one time we did speak on the phone, but I've had 7 professors on the show before in the eight years that I've been doing this. Six of them were PhD professors. One happened to have a master's degree. He was working on his PhD, and each and every one of them told me that academia that looks into or entertains conspiracies, they lose their jobs and their government contracts. I mean, you're not a professor, but you can attest to that statement. Truthfully,
yeah, I was at the University of Nevada. I was.
Oh, were you? Okay. I'm sorry.
Sure. I co-founded an entire institute, and I taught students. It was an adjunct professor because it was a private institute, as you know, many of the universities, like USC, has the Keck Institute for somebody else just funds it. So you have a dual position. So yes, I was a professor, and I'll turn that off. So I was a professor in that last appointment. And as Bobby Kennedy Jr. said in a video a couple months ago, we did a video called lineinthesand.us.
I've seen it.
And it did not occur to me until he said it, because we each told our little stories about, you know, what Fauci did to us. And it did not occur to me that Fauci actually funded, you know, the entire University of Nevada and this corrupt institute, literally to this day, funding the people to shut their mouths. So in all of this that happened to me, when I proved my complete innocence to my then attorney, Scott Freeman, literally showed him every page of the notebook, showed him everything I was saying was absolutely true, showed him Annette Whittemore forged the so-called IP contract, you know, that said that somehow I wrote something that said they owned every thought I ever had in my brain before or after I came to the Institute. And it was clearly a forgery, and clearly they made the whole thing up after I was fired, all under the direction of Tony Fauci. You make sure this never makes the light of day, and you live, and you live quite well, and you have riches, and they've paid me tens of millions of dollars in the last decade. You know, and we didn't realize any of this. And I didn't really realize. I knew they'd been forgiven their misappropriation crimes. I knew that Harvey Whittemore, who was convicted of election fraud, a federal crime, and was supposed to spend 5 years in jail, actually only spent a couple of months in a country club jail, and the whole attorney general's office, everybody, the FBI, they've known every bit of this since 2012. And Scott Freeman, on March 14th, the judge recused himself. Oops, yep, I took a little bribe and I made up this crime and destroyed this woman's life with a default judgment that says she never once gets to testify. Oh, guilty as charged, you know, the harshest sentence in his entire career, you know. Oh, and they're on March 14th, 2012, when I proved my innocence, they came back with a little deal. The whole government came back with a little deal. Okay, agree to not say anything in the world and you get your job back, poof. You get your grants back, poof. You get your reputation back, poof. And oh, maybe you'll even get a Nobel Prize. You know, Harvey Alter, who took the deal, who confirmed our work and knows exactly what we showed, took the deal. Got a Nobel Prize last year. Oh, the game goes on. So
well,
the band goes
on. Barack Obama got a Nobel Prize too. So take that with a grain of salt.
Well, I mean, but that's you know, that those professors tell you in academia, you're done if you go against the grain. You don't dare publish anything. You don't go against the grain. You don't do anything. Well, the opposite end of the spectrum is the people who get the Nobel Prize have covered up, you know, have covered up data. They haven't made great discoveries to change everything. You know, and in fact, many of them should just, you know, what they've done. Now I know that. I mean, I didn't believe it until Bobby said some of it and, you know, thought differently. But it's withdraw your paper or we'll retract it and imply fraud. And our data were right and true, and I proved it. I proved it in that last debate, September 22nd, 2011. I proved there's no contamination. You know, and here we're looking at COVID. And not one of these tests, these PCR tests, is real. No virus has been isolated. No SARS-CoV-2 has been isolated and associated from a human with disease and given to another human or another human cell line.
That's what I wanted to get into.
That it manufactured. So we know all of this, and we did all of that in 2011 from hundreds of people, from thousands of people, validated the work, and they wrote that fraudulent paper funded by Fauci in 2012. And they said there's no evidence of any of these viruses, the XMRVs, and then they just changed the name. They said, oh, it's polytropic virus, it's not xenotropic. He didn't confirm your work.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
That's not how the virus was named. And now in SARS-CoV-2, they're doing exactly the opposite. Everything SARS-CoV-2 and not one human has ever been proven to have that disease.
What have you got in there?
You've got HIV. You've got XMRV envelope, the only thing you need to cause disease. So they're just killing all the people with XMRV, calling it COVID, covering up the 6% of America. 4 to 6%. It could even be 4 to 8%. Some of the blood supply studies, blinded studies we did. Oh, it causes ITP. Oh, what are people getting from the vaccine? Oh, from the shot that makes every one of your cells express HIV envelope, ACE2 receptor, and XMRV envelope. The envelope alone causes disease. The fusion of cells, cancers, neuroAIDS, neuroimmune disease, and cancer. Oh, and that's who they're killing with the mask and the shots.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Judy. Isn't the PCR test, doesn't that look for a specific gene? Doesn't that look for actually a rare cancer gene?
The PCR test looks for PCR tests look for fragments of DNA or RNA, fragments of expressed. If you do reverse transcriptase PCR, as you would in looking for an RNA virus, then you're looking for just a piece. So what you usually do is you look for the conserved piece of the family as of viruses. It's called the GAG in retroviruses, and the envelope, that they call it the spike protein or a conserved piece of the structural part of the virus, or a piece of DNA that's expressed. You can do PCR. A polymerase chain reaction is just, you're just taking an enzyme and you're putting primer pairs on each side of about 100 base pairs of a gene. So you're not even looking at 10% of the virus. You're just looking at the variable region, the envelope, that your immune system sees, that with the spike that would call it SARS-CoV-2. And then you're looking at a structural conserved region in the family of coronaviruses. So 200 base pairs out of maybe 10 to 20,000 in coronaviruses to make up those envelope viruses. You're not looking at an infectious virus. You're not looking at anything. You simply amplified that piece, that 100 base pairs, and it'll turn to either a light signal, and it says, you know, here it is. You get a positive result if something was amplified in the middle of the primer pair, and so you'll get a positive signal. Well, they amplified it up to 40 signals which means you're going to get noise, because all you do is heat it up, break the base pairs apart, put the primer pairs back down, amplify the middle region, keep doing that. And it's like turning up a radio in a room where there's a lot of static. By the time you get to 40, you can't hear the specific words or the song. All you hear is the static and the noise, and you can't listen. And they're calling those positives. And more importantly, what you're supposed to do is sequence the base pair, the product of the gene you've amplified, of the RNA or DNA you've amplified. You're supposed to sequence that and prove it's a coronavirus envelope or gag. They did not do that. And when some people, clinical lab directors here, I think about four of them in California in the West, got 1,500 samples and sequenced them, there wasn't a single one that was SARS-CoV-2. They were all influenza A or influenza B. So we know the PCR test is pure fraud. And then they told you that. They told you they were going to do it. And in the cases, and so what they did in my case is they had, as I said on page, I believe it's page 91 of our book, Plague of Corruption, I wrote a letter to the National Heart and Blood and Lung Institute director on August 31st, 2011, when they were trying to cover up how heavily the blood supply was contaminated with the gamma retroviruses from animals, mainly mice, and it was heavily contaminated, maybe 10%. And I presented these data March 29th, 2011 at the New York Academy of Sciences, and I also showed them how to clean it up with a technology called Cerus, C-E-R-U-S, here in California. That's all in our book, Plague of Corruption. And so, I gave them the solution. So they covered up the problem after they cleaned up the blood supply, but they can't clean up the vaccines, because if you remove the viral antigens with any kind of filter, you're going to remove the antigen from the vaccine. So they couldn't clean them up. They didn't have to clean them up because there's no liability. So their only game between 2011, when they thought they shut down my work and got all of it, got all of the evidence, so I would never have an argument, so I would never have a proof, so I would never have samples, so I would never have the paperwork. In fact, we gave it to the FBI in 2014. They've got all of it. We were able to save the samples. We weren't cowards like William Thompson, who put the data that MMR hurt black boys more than black and Hispanics if given before the age of three. So that's when I knew it was pure evil. All you had to do was wait to give them MMR until blacks and Hispanics were 3 years old and their detox machinery caught up to the different kinds of their microbiome and their virome, which is what we're seeing right now. They make more antibody-dependent enhancement. And they make more antibodies, and they don't degrade RNA viruses as quickly. That's the RNA cell gene. 13% of our country has a single nucleotide polymorphism in this RNA cell gene. It's just a Pac-Man to gobble up RNAs, because RNAs in the blood are a danger signal. They turn on the fire. They turn on the inflammation. We have all the science on all of this, and all they had to do was stop, wait till black boys were three, change the recommendation to pediatricians, and not give the virus at the usual 12 months and give it later. And what did they do? They covered it up for, 20 years. They put it in the safe from early 2000s. William Thompson, the coward criminal whistleblower who still works for the CDC, still gets paid $200,000 a year, and has ever since. The evidence was proven in 2014. Oh, that was 2014. Oh, what did Tony Fauci do with Obama in 2014? Oh, release a contagious Ebola from Fort Detrick and kill 21,000 black people in Sierra Leone in Liberia. Oh, and then bring that plane with all the people in the suits and the mask, and bring the doctor Kent Brantley to the CDC. Remember, he stood there and everybody watched to see if Ebola would spread through our country. I can't even believe the amount of murder that man's yes. directed over the past 40 years.
Yes. Well, it is coming more to more in light. my voice is trying to fail me here. Not sure what's going on, but getting a little bit of a frog in my throat. But I go back to Oxum's razor. A lot of I say that a lot on air because I explain what it is. If there are a multitude of possibilities to an answer, a question or a problem, most of the time, usually the simplest answer is the correct answer. And I have heard about all of these conspiracies for 40 years, back when I was a teenager, back in the mid-70s and late 70s. I didn't talk a lot when I was a kid. I had a terrible stutter. I did a lot of listening. I listened to a lot of adults and a lot of people talking. And I heard about all of these conspiracies back when I was a kid, and I didn't pay attention to it, to tell you the truth, Judy, but it wasn't my time back then, but it is now. It has been for the last 12 years. I heard about the eugenics movement. I heard about this group of people that were called the New World Order. As I said, I didn't pay attention to it. It wasn't my time, but it is now. And I believe wholeheartedly the internet was invented for us, solely, mainly for us and mine. First, it is true that the internet was built for government and military use and underground communications, but the claim is, oh, somebody got the bright idea to make the internet available to the public, so we can make money off of the public. Well, you know, that is true. They have made lots of money out of us, but the internet has been a double-edged sword that has stabbed them in the back, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, right, because we can show all these data, and the fact is, it's data. That's why they have data burning parties. You know, that's why the CDC engineered that data burning party to cover up the MMR injury to blacks and Hispanics. That's why they wanted, if you look in my story, oh, give us your computer, give us your flash drives, give us everything that's a piece of paper, you know, because it's easy to Watergate style. You know, I grew up in Washington, D.C., and I never heard about any of these conspiracy theories. I'm just a kid studying history. Yeah. All I ever cared about was chemistry. And healing with plants and nutrition. I didn't live that world. I didn't know anything, and that's probably a good thing, because if I knew, what do you do?
I'm in rural Southwest Michigan, a town of 12,000 people. The county is about 36,000 people, but it's a farming community. Those type of people are more critical of the system and government to begin with.
Right. Yeah. I only saw, I grew up in Washington, D.C. I only saw the riots. I only saw things like happen with the Chicago 7. Those are the kinds of things I experienced. You know, Martin Luther King getting murdered April of 68, you know, Bobby Kennedy Sr., you know, June 6th, 5th. You know, I was on Constitution Avenue. I used to run through those tunnels in the under the Capitol. We were right there. That's where my mom was born, and when my parents got divorced when I was 10 years old, that's where we ended up. And then we moved to Northern Virginia. But yeah, so we understand the politics, and we understand, you know, how little is real that the public is really told.
Oh, yes, yes. So indeed. The media, in my estimation and in my humble opinion, they have been in on the, well, for lack of a better term, the joke on us American people for over 150 years, probably the better part of 150 years or even more.
Yeah, but to learn as I did the hard way, by doing that, you know, by living that between 2009 and 11, and seeing how the scientific journals are pure fraud, just seeing how they're controlled, seeing how they're, you know, there's no such thing as peer review. That's competitor review, and that's make sure nobody realizes, you know, at the top of the line, well, the truth, and nobody gets funded if they're anywhere close to that.
I know. So, it's quite odd that they would actually teach me this when I was in college, the early part of 2011, that the academia, the academic community were basically going to protect themselves, they said, in a journal. They were going to protect themselves. They were going to disregard and not publish anything that went out of the norm or out of the box, out of the, well, I call it the agenda. I mean, that's basically what it is. Anything that was outside of the agenda was not going to be published and not even going to be seen.
Right. And then you don't have a career. And then what they started doing when the internet journals came up, and other people just said, well, we'll start our own journals if yours are controlled, and where you could find truth, where you could find things. You know, then of course they lined it all up probably around in the early 2000s, and they did they gave them a tier. They gave them an impact factor. So then you couldn't get a job if you didn't publish in the journals with the impact factor. You know, science, nature. Nature is the corrupt one over in the UK, UK based, you know, the whole BMJ and all of those journals in Lancet that took out Andy Wakefield, not the data. They never take the data away.
Right.
They
right.
make the data go away by retracting it and burning it and having data burning parties. And they just don't count on a couple of people who saved it and scanned it, and now they got a real problem because their FBI's had it since 2014, and they've known the whole thing since 2011. So we never had to have a COVID. Never had to murder all those people,
right,
because
right.
if the FBI had done their job, they could have rounded up all these criminals a long time ago.
Right.
Deborah Burks, you know, who's running the system? What did Robert Redfield come out and say? Oh, now that I don't have a job anymore, my opinion is it, you know, he said almost exactly what I said at the Epoch Times.
Yes.
It came out April 8th of last year. So how many people did you murder, guys?
Yeah. Well, it's you know, you don't call it, I mean, they don't have to call it murder when it's called science or medicine or whatever the case might be. They don't call it murder. They just call it science or medicine.
No basis in science for the mask. It's murder. There's no basis in science for the shots. They're chemical pathogens. They're not vaccines. They don't prevent transmission. They just kill people. You're just injecting the pathogenic parts of a synthetic weapon, of a bioweapon, into every cell of the body of the most vulnerable people in the world. And literally killing them. Yeah, it's COVID, but it's not SARS-CoV-2 that caused it. It's them that caused it. Like you said, there's no such thing as a single cause. That's why we knew from my work, my PhD work, HIV didn't cause AIDS. Because to be a causative, every person with the virus has to get the disease. And nobody with SARS-CoV-2 gets the disease.
Actually,
so they just call you asymptomatic carriers. No, you're healthy people. Healthy people don't spread disease.
Isn't it? Wasn't it the hemophiliacs, the people that had kidney disease, liver disease? Weren't they the ones that were given the AIDS virus?
Yeah, and they were given the hepatitis B vaccine.
Yes, that's what I'm,
another,
yes.
In the early days, another contaminated vaccine, contaminated with beta retroviruses and gamma retroviruses. There's a beta retroviruses that is associated with, you know, with cirrhosis, with various liver diseases. So, yeah, they took the most vulnerable people and said, okay, you guys, you're all gays, IV drug users, and prostitutes. Therefore, you have to get the hepatitis vaccine. Yes. It's all documented in the movie The Band Played On, in the book by Randy Schiltz, and the movie was 1993. So when we think about the timing, but there for a decade, there from 1982, when I first heard of young healthy men at UCLA getting weird diseases nobody gets in America, like Kaposi sarcoma, which later was associated with a herpes virus, HHV-8, Kaposi sarcoma herpes virus. You don't isolate a virus from a person and have it being active in causing disease unless you've destroyed their T and NK cells. So these vaccines are literally just going to destroy your natural killer cells, your macrophages, your frontline innate immune defense, and you're going to be susceptible to everything. And I just wish we could wake enough people up to say, why would you inject that? When all that, you know, oh, wait a minute, everybody's opening up, realizing it's the common cold, nobody's sick, everybody's healthy. We've got to make sure they have to have a passport. They have to get the shot in order to get their freedoms back. We have a short window of opportunity. That's what this, it was on CDC, on CNN the other night, you know, with Chris Cuomo and this Chinese lady. Oh, wait a minute, we're going to lose our opportunity. Yes. We've got to have a carrot. We've got to tell them they've got to have the vaccine or they don't get their freedoms back.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
We're going to lose that opportunity because Florida's open and Texas is open. It's insanity.
I find
Why doesn't everybody realize they're killing you? You'll never be able to get that out of there. And you'll destroy your family for generations. For generations. You may even extinct the human race.
Certainly. Certainly.
Everyone will have AIDS. And these viruses, they, when you change,
and they'll all be sterile too, won't they?
They'll all be sterile. So they'll get their wish with their eugenics. And who are they doing first? Oh, the people who can't defend themselves. Mental institutions. You know, people who have to have a job. They're forcing it on the military.
Yep.
They're forcing it on teachers, on blacks, on nursing homes, on people who haven't fogged a mirror in years. They just sit there drooling from the last batch of vaccine with dementia. They're killing them. They're murdering them. They've already murdered thousands of these people, and they call it COVID. You know, it doesn't have anything to do with SARS-CoV-2, folks, but neither did the first one. Neither did the first round. You created that. The PCR test is 97% positive. It's a case demic. It's not a disease. Nobody was sick. Nobody was sick. Some died, yes, but that was the flu. That was the flu shot you took and you wore the mask. The flu shot's loaded with coronaviruses, with retroviruses. You know, and yeah, the flu shot's been deadly for years to the elderly, and yet they keep injecting it because there's no liability. So this was a kill of the people they injured, and they targeted them first with this shot. Now they've got healthy people out there, you know, wearing masks, destroying their own immune systems, and getting shots of chemical pathogens. As David Martin said, who take a chemotherapy for a cancer they might never get or have? You know, nobody. Nobody.
That that reminds me.
Their immune system. And that's what it's doing.
Yes,
and
then
this is Gert Vandenbosch, Dr. Gert Vandenbosch. He's a vaccinologist. You know, his PhD, his degree is in virology, and vaccinology is what he's done.
He's
done the same thing for his career that I've done. He's worked under a single hypothesis that we can educate the immune system to prevent and treat infectious and chronic disease. So I educate the immune system with plants. He designs vaccines. And so now he's saying this is absolutely the wrong time, the wrong shot, the wrong place. The horse is already out of the barn. Now you're going to develop something so specific and so tight, inject it instead of the natural route, cripple the innate immune system, the macrophage, the T cells, and every tissue of the body with that synthetic nanoparticle. Putting that in every cell of the body. And he said, it's going to develop an entire country of people who the next time they see any common cold coronavirus, thousands of them, the next time they simply will become those super spreaders. They will get sick. They will die. You know, as I said, when the only time I
and it's
ever
all going to be COVID.
HIV was from an AIDS patient.
And it's
if
all
you're not
be
sick,
COVID.
You're not spreading HIV.
And it's all going to be COVID, no matter what, whether you die of a car crash or a heart attack or cancer or even liver disease. It's going to be COVID.
They got away with that last year.
Yeah. And they're still going to get away with it, too, unless it stops.
And they're going to get away with it this year. And those of us who don't comply will be put away.
Yes.
Yes. It'll happen to me as it happened on March 10th, where, a police officer can set me up on a plane, take everybody off the plane, take all the witnesses away, and beat me up a little bit because I wore the wrong type of mask.
That's right. You know? That's right.
You know, there are a lot of prophylactic strategies, folks, that are vaccines. I'll take my interferons. I'll take my hydroxychloroquine. Tony Fauci said in 2005, hydroxychloroquine is a vaccine for SARS. Good. Which vaccine do we get to take, folks? You know, we're not going to get to. If you could take them off a plane for wearing a triple layer silver antimicrobial antiviral mask because it's not your toxic mask. It's not that one with asbestos in it. It's not that one with carbon nanofibers that is causing lung disease,
yes,
driving back those bacterial contaminated ones, causing bacterial, just as in the 1918 flu epidemic had little to do with influenza,
yes,
everything to do with mask and bacterial contaminations and infection. So now we're putting asbestos. Those paper blue surgical. And whatever, there's another color of them. There are many colors of them. They were banned from Canada. The children were breathing fibers and coughing cat hairs.
Yep.
Oh, that's gonna work really well for mesothelioma and driving lung cancer. And I guess that's the idea because, you know, in chapter 8 of our first book, Plague, the big oh my God is we can't protect the lab workers. The lab workers were all seroconverting to contagious cancer and neuroimmune disease causing viruses, contagious autoimmune disease, contagious ALS, contagious Parkinson's. It was coming right off our benches, folks. And biosafety level 2, they even wrote papers, unintended spread release of a biosafety level 2 contaminant. No, when you have a contagious cancer-causing retrovirus, I think you're really talking about biosafety level 3 or 4. And they couldn't afford to retrofit the labs. You have mouse facilities in every college. You're crippling the mouse genome. You're using CRISPR. You're amplifying. You're making, constructing infectious molecular clones. And the labs are loaded with them. And the people, the lab workers are dying. Why do you think the lab workers are the ones who deserve to get it first? Because they infected us and we have to die first. And so if you outsmart them and you wear a mask that actually might prevent you from getting lung cancer or driving the lung cancer from the XMRVs that you inhaled in 2011, they don't want to pay for it. My
sure.
colleagues, and we show you in the book Plague of Correction, the number of my colleagues who died under 60 of cancer. Thank God I worked in a biosafety level 3 or 4 most of my life. Who knew that would save my life? I find it
quite interesting that the scientist, Kerry Mullis, that invented the PCR test, I find it quite interesting that he died of natural causes, of course, August of 2019, just barely 6 months before we started dealing with this scam.
There are an awful lot of us who they want to die of natural causes, or they want to get to like when I was in jail, It's like kill yourself. It'll go better for everyone else. They spend a lot of time trying to get you to kill yourself.
Well, there's two ways. There's always been two ways that the criminal element in government, they want you to shut up, is the bottom line. And there's two ways that they can shut you up. You know, they either put a bullet in the back of your head or they pay you off, one or the other.
Right. We escaped the bullet in the back of our head November 9th of 2011. So they grabbed us up with their phony little game on November 18th of 2011. And so, yeah. And now police are beating me up on an airplane where they remove all the witnesses, you know, and try to take the phone out of my hand. Taped enough.
Did you? Yeah.
You know, we're just going to keep talking. I mean, you're not going to scare me, and you can beat me up and you can kill me. And every single person, you know, look at it. What do I have to gain?
Yep.
What do I haven't had a job, you know, haven't made, lost $10 million.
You don't enjoy being ridiculed. I know I sure don't. That's
well,
for sure.
I don't care. It doesn't. My mom taught me, you know, I don't care what anybody else says, Judy Ann. You do what I say.
So yeah. Yes.
I learned really young, you know, I don't care what you say about me. I only care about the truth. And I've shown the data. None of this is my opinion. Why haven't they said one word about our book?
Right.
You debunk me. Debunk the science, folks.
I'll actually debunk
the science. They never have. Come on, Fauci, man up. Wait a minute. You don't have a pair. just, you know, come on. Let's talk. I'll show you the data. That's what I do in every single talk.
That's right.
I geek out on science. The pathways are clear. The data are clear. Never has our data been rejected. They can say it has all you want. But that 2012 paper, when they didn't put a single patient in the study that fit the criteria, they didn't put a single patient in the study, in the big validation study. And then they said we couldn't replicate our work because there was no association with XMRVs with CFS. Sorry.
Yes.
It was still 6% in the patients and in the controls. That's what we said. Yep. We identified and isolated a new family of disease-associated retroviruses associated with a lot of diseases, not just chronic fatigue syndrome that Tony Fauci's been covering it up. And, if you got XMRV was in the blood supply from the 80s, because that was the validation study. Harvey Alter and Shai-Shing Lo pulled a box out of the freezer. Who was it? Children. Healthcare workers, like Arthur Ashe, Ryan White. People who weren't gays, IV drug users, or prostitutes, and they were getting T-cell abnormalities. They were getting innate immune dysfunction. They were getting acquired immune deficiencies, but there's no evidence of HIV in their sample.
Right.
They were negative.
Right.
Well, when he pulled that box out of the freezer after our paper came out, When he pulled that box out of the freezer that said non-HIV AIDS, all the samples he'd saved since the 80s, it was even better than ours, 86% positive and almost 6.8%. Do you know how many million Americans had HIV at the height of the epidemic, which was 1991 when my PhD thesis was published? 1 million.
This is
25 to 50 times that. They can't afford it. They can't afford the knowledge that the blood supply was contaminated for 30 years.
Yes.
And so what they tried to do all summer, there's no such thing as XMRV, Judy, or HIV patients would have it. And I got in a little trouble there because I said, they died. You had HIV. Taking out your T and B cells and your monocytes, and you had XMRV, taking out your natural killer cells, and you died of AIDS. That was the AIDS. And then you got pneumocystis pneumonia. You got the parasites. Why do you think the ivermectins work? Why do you think the interferons work? They had opportunistic infections because they had a totally crippled immune system, and they died.
Well, Dr. Mikovits, we've almost gotten to the hour here. We got like 2 or 3 minutes until your time is up. But I have tried to contact each and every one of those doctors, and including Robert Kennedy Jr., and I haven't been able to find any sort of contact or email for them, but would you send him my email? And well, actually, would you ask him if I would be able to email him?
Okay.
Because I would certainly like to get him on. That would be a big interview for anyone, actually, not just me, but
yeah. Well, that's what everybody's figuring out, and he's very gracious to talk a lot because, you know, he wrote the foreword of the book, and he really didn't understand it till I started telling, and I said, but you know, and he. You know, he wrote it. He drafted a beautiful one, you know, when we first wrote the book, Plague of Corruption. And he said, you know, and I said, Bobby, but it was delaying the publication. It was supposed to be published in November of 19. And the timing is very interesting. He was holding it up because he wasn't finished. And we had added another chapter in the summer of, in the fall. And that was what we called my dead man's trigger chapter. And I'm so naive, I didn't know what a dead man trigger is until one of my friends read the book and said, oh, you can't publish that. You can't publish that. You'll get killed.
Yeah.
And she said, you need a dead man's trigger. So I thought about it a little while and I called Kent. And I said, hey, Kent, there's one more story we need to tell. And so that's the last chapter. So I said, Bobby, how can I help? And he said, Judy, something's missing. And I said, Bobby, I know you're busy. Just read the last chapter. And he read it and I said, it's time you stop quoting the criminals. Cause he had just written the fall of 2019, this big letter on Children's Health Defense defending that he wasn't an anti-vaxxer to his family, but that we need to understand these are dangerous for certain people at certain times. And they're not, it's not a one size fits all. And in fact, there's a lot of problems with contaminants in all of these shots. And so, but he quoted William Thompson, the criminal so-called whistleblower who covered up those data about the MMR for 30 years. So I said, Bobby, just read the last chapter and please stop quoting the criminals. Time to quote the heroes like Brian Hooker, who do with FOIAs, you know, and Bobby wrote, love it. And he wrote it, love it with that idea. And he basically, read the last chapter and then, it just blew him away, called me up 3 weeks later and said, oh my God, congratulations. I said, don't congratulate me. Congratulate Kent Heckenlively. He wrote the stories. He dogged me. He just started from the day I got fired and never stopped. And because he's a lawyer by training, I was told when I was held silent for 5 years from 11 to 15, I wasn't allowed to talk publicly, go on any blogs, go to any meetings, show any data, or I'd go back to jail. And I'm like, and they would find new evidence. And I said, oh, yes. That's ridiculous. There is no new evidence. And they said coldly, there was no evidence the first time.
The first time, yes.
And they scared me enough that I remained silent, but Kent's a lawyer. So
you know what?
I could talk to Kent, and we taped hundreds of hours like this. So we taped and taped and taped, and there you are. So are the books transcribed in every detail. And, you know, Tony Fauci can't answer because I got his emails.
Correct. No, you know, the I'm actually going to buy both of those books of yours. Do you know of the COVID-19, The Great Reset by Klaus Schwab?
I just heard of that book.
Oh, I actually read that on air, and I'm reading another one on air right now, too. But I'm going to buy both of those books and read them on air because the listeners seem to enjoy that.
And they are audible. If you want to discuss them on air, we can, you know, we can do a chapter a week. Kent is a marvelous story.
Oh, that'd be brilliant. Yeah.
And he's a lawyer. So we made sure every I was dotted in T, and it's not self-published. It's Simon & Schuster, Skyhorse Publishing. You know, there's just nothing they can do except say, oh, Judy Mikovits is that ugly person who did all those bad things. She stole her own brain. We've got films coming out. So, yeah, I can, I'd be happy. You can get both books on Audible. And I can mail you a copy. I can autograph it. I just got a couple of copies of Plague of Corruption yesterday.
Certainly.
So I can autograph and send you one if you'd like.
That would be great. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, we are pretty much at the hour, maybe like a couple minutes over, but I hope you don't mind that. You did say you wanted about 45 minutes to an hour, and we've got just right at the hour. So I do appreciate you coming on, and as I said earlier, I would like to have you on as much as possible, as much as your schedule would permit you. I think it was 3 weeks ago or whatever, you said you got accosted at the airport, so you never did make that flight to Florida to that conference?
Right, I did not. I was teaching doctors there, so I gave the talks online. But no, I haven't. I was arrested for criminal trespassing, as I mentioned, and abused by a police officer. They were teaching me a lesson, and I have no doubt they knew who it was. So, all right.
Sure. Well, as I mentioned earlier, I would like you to ask a lot of these people, including Robert Kennedy Jr., if I could get their email. I don't want to ask you their email, because they might say, no, don't give my email out to just anyone. But
I'll certainly get it to him.
And thank you for your time today.
You're welcome. It was nice to talk to you.
All right. It was brilliant. Both the chat rooms are going a little crazy. So I'm going to respond to all of them when I get done with you here. So,
okay. And if you'd like me to email you electronic versions of the book before I mail it to you, I can do that as well.
Oh, sure, that'd be fine.
Just text me or email me your mailing address.
Okay.
And I think I have your email.
I am going to support you, so I'm going to buy the books also.
Okay.
Well, I just got my stimulus check last night, so I got an extra $1,400, and it's burned a hole in my pocket.
We don't get those.
No.
We get to stay poor.
Right.
We're doing okay.
All right.
Well, nice to talk to you. And I can drop money in a PayPal, and I can mail these, because I just buy them from Amazon.
Okay.
So I can do that way as well. Whichever way you like. I have all three here right now: the Plague of Corruption, and the Case Against the Mask. So,
sure.
Those are hard. They're hard to get because they're heavily censored. So I'll drop them in the mail, and we can figure out how to write a check. Whatever, doesn't matter.
All right. Thank you once again.
Okay. Thanks. Appreciate you, Steve.
Have a good day.
You too.
Okay, everyone. That was a lot of information there. Enjoyed every second of it, so I do hope to get her on as much as possible. I don't have a clue what her schedule is, but we do talk on her phone, and she actually gave me her number so I can text her back and forth, and I have her Skype, of course, and I have her email, so we will be talking to each other quite often, and hopefully some of her other doctor friends and people that she knows, I would love to get on. So thanks for coming out for this little special, and I've got some tunes to finish out the hour. So thanks again, everyone.